Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africam. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. Today is Sunday, February 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting is underway in Nigeria in its presidential and parliamentary elections.
The INEC chairman, Professor Mahmood Yakubu, announced that official coalition of the results of Saturday's presidential and National Assembly elections will begin at 6 p.m.
U.S. First Lady Jill Biden concludes her three-day visit to Kenya.
I just want to say thank you to all of you for inviting us in to see this process, to see how you are really creating financial independence for yourselves.
And clashes continue to be reported between the armed forces and M23 rebels in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Those and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Officially closed for the presidential elections in Nigeria, Africa's most populated country, Saturday afternoon. But in some polling centers, voters are still trying to cast their ballots. The Independent National Electoral Commission has said the delay was caused by logistic issues and concerns of insecurity. Timothy Abiezu reports from Abuja.
Hundreds of voters are still in line to cast their ballots several hours after voting officially ended here. Some of them say they had been waiting in queue since 5 a.m., more than 3 hours before the polls opened. Frustration is getting to many, like Sunday testimony.
I sleep here. And I'm ready to sleep here until tomorrow. I need to hurry again. Anytime we're late, we're late. If not tomorrow, they won't come, we'll wait. I'm going to carry my mattress, my pillow. Everything is here already.
The Independent National Electoral Commission briefed journalists Saturday afternoon and said the delay has been caused by setbacks in deployment of staff and election materials to those areas, as well as security threats. INEC Chairman Mahmood Yakubu said early Saturday that the commission was warned of an attack by bandits in Shiroro local government area of central Niger State and delayed opening the polls there. Yakubu also said the INEC has received reports of election disruptions, including the theft of voting machines and violence across many states, including Lagos, Anambra, Katsina, Imo, Delta, Abia, Kebbi, and Bayelsa. Yakubu said security officers responded and retrieved some of the stolen bimodal voter accreditation systems, BVAS, and restored calm to these places.
In Oshimili local government area of Delta State, thugs attacked a polling unit and two BVAS machines were lost in the process. Similarly, in Katsina State, thugs attacked one of our voting locations and snatched six BVAS machines. But again, were able to recover and use the spare BVAS machines.
Out of 18 candidates in the race for presidency, three stand a realistic chance. Across thousands of polling units where voting has been concluded, many praise the INEC for introducing the BVAS technology for the first time in a major national election. Emeka Okafor has just voted.
I've casted my vote, and honestly, INEC have done a good job. We're not scared of anything. Whoever is being captured or verified is inside the system. It's not a senior robot, it's a manual stuff. It's computerized. Names are there, information are there.
Many here say they will remain in line until they cast their ballot, however long that may take. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
VOA's Peter Klote is in Nigeria to cover the elections. Earlier, I reached him in the capital, Abuja. Hi, Peter. How is the situation a day after the elections?
It's been quiet because from the night of Friday through Saturday, they just released the movement restrictions, or they just lifted the movement restrictions. So it's been quiet. The INEC chairman, Professor Mahmoud Yakubu, announced that official coalition of the results of Saturday's presidential and national assembly elections will begin at 6 p.m. He officially opened the National Coalition Center, where all the results will be announced by the Electoral Commission, but it will begin at 6 p.m. this evening. That is what the Electoral Commission chairman announced early this morning.
We understand in some areas people had to vote on Sunday because of delays in delivering materials and that kind of problems.
That is true. There were glitches and there were some technical hitches, including areas where people reported of some insecurity concerns. So the Electoral Commission officials met stakeholders and decided to extend the voting until today. Actually, there was a place here in Abuja where voting did not take place because of some concerns that some officials of the Electoral Commission were not doing what they were supposed to do. So those elections, about 5,000 voters were asked to come back today to vote. So yes, indeed, people have been voting today in some of the states where there were technical glitches, there were delays and all that. So they will not be disenfranchised from voting.
The commission has said that they intend to be transparent and the tallying will be done in real time for people to monitor. How are people confident that this process of counting and tallying the ballots will be transparent?
Some are not confident in the Electoral Commission's ability to administer and ensure the elections run smoothly. In fact, the national chairman of the Labour Party Congress has issued a press release calling on the Electoral Commission or the Independent National Electoral Commission to cancel results in certain areas, including Rivers, because they heard reports of some untoward things happening and they felt that the election, some of the polling areas, there were manipulation. So they called for the areas where reports came of manipulation to be struck out or cancelled by INEC. However, INEC will now have to explain what its decision is on some of the areas where reports came that there were some funny tricks or hoodlums, so to speak, or miscreants trying to undermine the integrity of the election. But in the places that I visited here in Abuja, it ran smoothly. The results were counted in front of people. It was signed off by the polling agent as it's supposed to be signed off and then taken to a coalition center where everything is gathered and then transmitted to the national server of the INEC so they can release them today, as Professor Mahmoud, the chairperson of the Independent National Electoral Commission, has said. So yes, indeed, what you heard was right. But they are trying to rectify it. INEC will give us a position on some of these things when it comes up today, later today rather.
Does the commission have a timeline as to when they expect to have done, to have finished the tallying of the votes?
The chairperson of the Electoral Commission, Professor Mahmoud, did not specify if within 48 or 56 hours the election results will be announced. But he said, actually, the coalition was supposed to have started at 12 p.m. Abuja time, 6 a.m. Washington time, but he postponed it until 6 p.m. Abuja time, which is 12 noon Washington time, in order to begin the coalition process that is announcing the results. So each head of a particular state would come from the Electoral Commission, will come and declare the results that came from their specific state. So that's how it's going to be. 36 of them will be announcing. And whatever they've gotten and certified by INEC are the results that will be announced. And INEC chairman said that everybody should pay attention or only release information or results that come from INEC and nowhere else, because that is the only constitutionally mandated body to organize elections in Nigeria.
That was my colleague Peter Klote speaking to me from Abuja.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Some voters in Port Harcourt, Niger Delta region of Nigeria, have called on the country's electoral body to improve on the voting machine used for the general election on Saturday. The bimodal voter accreditation system machine was used for the election by the Independent National Electoral Commission. Some voters complained about the delay in uploading results by the machine, while others hailed its effectiveness in accrediting voters. Some voters spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye on how they thought the overall election went.
I am Benjamin Kamde, a businessman.
All right, sir.
Well, the election has come and gone, but I have several reservations about the process. The malfunctioning of the Beavers machine was not encouraging. Most people were not allowed to vote. And then if you see the results, most of the polling units, they will tell you 45 people, a total number of votes. And that portrays the fact that the Beavers machine did not work. Most people that came out to vote were not recognized by the Beavers machine. And the polling agents will tell you that they did not have the code to the Beavers machine, even to upload results. It was the same problem. They were not able to upload the results. So with this, I think I'm not satisfied with the process.
My name is Chifu Chaudinka. I'm a trader. My brother, I'm not happy. I'm not happy. Where I voted was very peaceful. Everything went very smooth. But at the long last, they started saying that they can't upload. Some group of boys now came and carried the bylaw plus and ran away. And different centers like that have the same issue. And as I'm talking to you now, I learned that they are somewhere writing the results and all the rest. So, my brother, I'm not happy about what happened. I'm not happy about what is happening now.
Yes.
I'm suggesting a rerun. They should make out a date and cancel the result and rerun the election again. Thank you.
I am Professor Patrick Winapugi. I'm a teacher of the University of Science and Technology. The Beavers machine is very effective. It's doing well from where I voted. However, I have to blame INEC if the process failed. Because after successful voting, I voted for just 1 minute. After voting successfully, we noticed that INEC refused to upload results using the IRF to the server. And so there's, and now presently, in the INEC offices, what PDP is doing in the other office, INEC, is changing those results in their favor. And so we need to move. INEC must sit up and do what is right. Something has to be done from Abuja to address this matter.
Okay, my name is Dagogo Emmanuel Seprebo. I'm a builder by profession. I want to say that the election in my area, in Asaretoro, went peacefully. We voted and... But I'm disappointed in the empire called INEC. As a graduate or as an engineer, I'm disappointed that INEC, as an empire, cannot conduct simple election that, in the normal sense, that can be done with all the funds that they have received and to go proper and peaceful in the way it should. INEC is not concerned about credible and transparent election. INEC is taking side in an election that they are conducting, causing problems in the minds of the people in the state, which is not proper. INEC should sit up and carry out what they have been allowed or assigned to carry out, because they are taking side and they're not doing what they should do. Because the results, after the end of the day, results that people have voted cannot be uploaded through the Beaver. And then I wonder, why can't it be uploaded? Or why is it the Beaver failing? They have all the time on earth. They give them the resources to make sure that this election come and people will see that at least 70-80% of the election is okay. But to my greatest surprise, the election to me in the INEC part is 0%. And that is my take.
The views of some voters in Port Harcourt. They spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us
24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments or greetings. Dial the international code +1 then 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1 then 202-258-3076.
Parliamentary elections were held in Djibouti on Friday, where President Ismail Omar Guelleh's ruling party faced a single opposition party. Djibouti's main opposition parties, including the Movement for Democratic Renewal and Development and the Republican Alliance for Democracy, boycotted the elections, branding the vote as a sham. All the two parties contested seats in the 65-member National Assembly, where veteran President Ismail Omar Guelleh's ruling Union for Presidential Majority was assured of victory. U.S. First Lady Jill Biden concluded her three-day visit to Kenya Sunday after holding private talks with her Kenyan counterpart, Rachel Ruto, at State House in Nairobi and visiting women's empowerment projects. From the Kenyan capital Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports for VOA.
On Saturday, Biden visited Joyful Women Program in Nairobi's Kibera slums alongside Kenya's First Lady Rachel Ruto, where they both saw how table banking empowers women.
I just want to say thank you to all of you for inviting us in to see this process, to see how you are really creating financial independence for yourselves. You're quite an impressive group.
In Kenya, the lending system has proven to be a successful method for women to control their finances while enhancing their socio-economic status. The model is active in 39 counties across Kenya and is expected to expand nationwide. Stella Chepngeno, the head of programs at Joyful Women Organization, explains how it works.
Table banking is a group funding strategy where members come, meet, save, borrow that amount that they have borrowed immediately. There is no money that goes into the bank. So as they continue borrowing the savings, they borrow it for what? They borrow it for short-term and long-term loans.
Kenya's First Lady, Rachel Ruto, welcomed Biden to Kenya.
We are very grateful that during your trip to this country, Kenya, you had time to come and meet with the ladies. One of the things that COVID taught us was to go digital. We're in the process of digitizing our processes and digitizing the table banking concept so that going forward, especially now that we are talking about the young generation, 19.7 is the median age for Kenya. We have very many young people who may want to just work on their phones.
Biden arrived in Kenya late Friday, accompanied by her granddaughter, Naomi Biden. A three-day visit to Kenya, which is our third to the country, sought to strengthen partnerships between Kenya and the United States. U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged to strengthen ties with African nations. Since the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in December, several top officials have been on the continent, including Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. Senior U.S. officials said the U.S. First Lady would draw attention to women's empowerment, children's issues, and the hunger crisis affecting 22 million people across the Horn of Africa. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility for killing more than 70 soldiers, wounding dozens, and taking 5 hostages in an ambush on a military convoy in northern Burkina Faso. The statement posted Friday by AMAQ, the group's news agency, said it attacked a convoy trying to advance to areas under its control near Dou in the Sahel Kwadlan province, seizing weapons and chasing retreating soldiers for miles into the desert. Images released by the group show 54 slain bodies in military uniform lying in the blood-stained dirt, as well as more than 50 seized assault rifles and images of the 5 soldiers it said were taken prisoner. Clashes continue to be reported between the armed forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo and M23 rebels in the Masisi and Rushuru territories of North Kivu. Over the past 2 days, the rebels have made unexpected advances, occupying new areas and driving many residents from their villages. Zanem Neti Zaidi has the details.
Less than a week before the last meeting of the heads of state of the East African Community, several localities in Masisi territory have come under the control of M23 rebels. Civil society activist Christian Kalamo says the latest call for a ceasefire launched by EAC leaders in Addis Ababa has been respected by the Congolese army to the unfortunate benefit of the rebels. He says that the National Army should not allow itself to be distracted by the decisions of the East African Community. He says that the army should launch offensives and not follow the resolutions of the East African Community. Influential members of Masisi territory maintain that this war will never end as long as the DRC continues to put faith in these foreign forces. Celestin Ifashe is a large land owner from royal lineage in Masisi. He says that he is asking the National Army to disassociate itself from the EAC and the UN MONUSCO force because the foreign soldiers of the EAC are fighting war through this war, and it seems absurd to think that they really want an end to the conflict and to their jobs in the territory of Masisi, Ruchuru, and everywhere else in the DRC. As of Friday, the city of Mushaki, 12 kilometers from the town of Sake, the last locality before reaching the city of Goma, is in the hands of the rebels. Political analyst Evariste Iragi says an advance by rebels would be justified according to reported reinforcements received by these rebels in recent weeks. He says that recently the reinforcement of the M23 rebels with more men was reported in the territory of Nyiragongo here in Kibumba. More than 300 fighters have crossed the border from Rwanda to join rebel ranks. There have also been reports of troop movements in the territories occupied by the M23, with many men coming from Ruchuru to Masisi to reinforce the front in those areas. The military governor of North Kivu province, in his latest announcement, said the military is committed to recovering all the localities controlled by the M23 so people there can take part in the electoral process already underway. I'm Zanem Nechizaidi for VOA Africa.
The Sudanese Resistance Committee, a grassroots group, led a big protest in Sudan on Tuesday and announced that it has steadfastly rejected any negotiations with Sudan's military leaders, General Abdel Fattah Burhan and General Dagalo. The protest group has called for both men to be tried in court. The announcement came amid growing tension between General Mohamed Dagalo, known as General Hamid, the deputy head of Sudan's ruling council, and the army chief, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhani, the country's de facto leader. Joseph Sigo is the director of research at African Center for Strategic Studies. He explained to VOA's senior analyst, Mohamed El-Shanawi, the impact of these developments on the troubled transition in Sudan.
Well, it reflects the deep distrust of the military. And this is distrust based on experience. The military has repeatedly derailed efforts to move the democratic transition forward, despite previous promises that it would do so. And so they have very low levels of credibility. Moreover, the military has been in power for 3 decades. And so the Sudanese population is very wary of anything that the military has said because, you know, from their perspective, the military is just trying to hold on to power at all cost and isn't committed to the revolution of 2019.
General Dagalo's comments came amid growing tension between his paramilitary unit called Rapid Support Force, RSF, and the Army Chief, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the country's de facto leader. General al-Burhan warned last week that he would not tolerate the RSF operating as an independent force and should instead be merged into the army. What could that lead to in Sudan?
It's notable that General Burhan is saying that, and it again points to the escalating tensions, and it could portend, you know, highly destabilizing implications for Sudan. There has been an ongoing rivalry between Burhan and Hemeti. This takes many forms. You have the standing Sudanese armed forces versus the militia run by Hemeti, the Rapid Support Forces. You know, it's a tension between the Sudan center and Khartoum versus the periphery. Hemeti hails from Western Sudan. And increasingly, the Hemeti's forces, the RSF, are better resourced. They have access to revenues from the gold trafficking in the West and from stipends that Hemeti has gained from sending fighters to Yemen in support of the Saudi forces there. Nonetheless, the Sudan armed forces, the statutory forces, are more established. And so you have this very uneasy coalition that has been coexisting. And as part of the proposed transition, the RSF, the Rapid Support Forces, are supposed to be integrated into the Sudan armed forces. And this is a big hurdle that we're seeing for the transition to move forward. By doing so, Hemeti would effectively be giving up his key lever of power and influence in Sudan. And he's been very hesitant to do that. And that's one of the reasons Burhan would like to see, you know, the integration happening so that he is able to absorb the RSF inside the statutory forces. So you really have a battle of wills, a battle of interest that is going on. And it's dangerous because if the two forces were to face off, it could be highly destabilizing and to a point of a civil war, potentially like what we've seen in South Sudan. And this would add to the already volatile context we have in Sudan, where there are other armed groups who are fighting the Sudan armed forces. So it's a important escalation that we'll want to keep our eyes on.
That was Joseph Sigo, the Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C. He was speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shanawi.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Authorities in Cameroon say at least 19 people were injured in an explosion at a sports event in southwest Cameroon. 9 athletes competing in the Mount Cameroon Race of Hope in Buwe Town were injured, as well as 10 civilians, including a baby. The annual race was celebrating its 50th anniversary with more than 550 athletes from 13 countries taking part. The race was less than 30 minutes in when the explosion Saturday sent runners and spectators fleeing. The Central African nation has been plagued by fighting since English-speaking separatists launched a rebellion in 2017 with the stated goal of breaking away from the area dominated by the French-speaking majority country and setting up an independent English-speaking state. This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, sports and music from our African collection. February is U.S. Black History Month, and all month long, we are talking to officials, historians, and authors about Black American history. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Annette Gordon Reed wrote the New York Times best-selling book on Juneteenth, It celebrates the day slavery ended in the southern U.S. state of Texas, June 19, 1865. Juneteenth became a federal U.S. public holiday just 2 years ago. Gordon Reed tells VOA's Carol Van Damme on Juneteenth is part memoir and part history as she describes what it was like growing up as a six-year-old girl in Texas.
My family on my mother's side and my father's side have been in Texas for a very, very long time. I can trace my mother's ancestry on one side back to the 1820s, before Texas is Texas, before, you know, it's a part of its own republic, before it becomes a state. And on my father's side, back to the 1850s. So most of my family still lives there. My family did not join the Black diaspora that left the South and went North. They mainly stayed in Texas. So it was a story about, or is a story about, the family with these kinds of deep roots and where I grew up, the small towns where I grew up, one of which, well, both of them actually, were pretty tough on, you know, in terms of race. There had been lynchings there. A man was burned at the stake.
Just for our foreign audience, when you talk about lynching and a man burned at the stake, how long ago was that?
The lynchings went throughout the 40s and, you know, 1940s. The man was burned at the stake in the 1920s, the late 1920s, on Courthouse Square in Conroe, Texas, which is what I'm talking about. And it's a place that has a tough racial history. That's not that long ago. Not that long ago. That's medieval sounding, right? But it's right there in my hometown. And in the mid-60s, my parents decided to send me to be the first Black child to enter a white school in my town. So I talk about the history to try to give people a perspective on what it was like, you know, what that decision was like and how momentous that was. This is 10 years after Brown versus Board of Education, which outlawed segregation in public schools. But the school was resisting. The school districts in the South and other places were resisting that, and mine as well. But they came up with something called a Freedom of Choice Plan, which meant that white parents were supposed to pick white schools and Black parents were supposed to pick Black schools. And my mother and father decided to pick a white school for me to go to. I think they were caught up in the civil rights movement at that time. We had the Civil Rights Act, the Marshall in Washington a year before, the Civil Rights Act of 64, the Voting Rights Act. All of those things were happening around that time. And so this was their bid to make a contribution to the civil rights movement. And so at 6 years old, I went to Anderson Elementary School, which was all white, and began my career in education there, you could say.
How was that for you, your experience? Were the kids nice to you, or how was it?
Some of them were nice, and some of them were not nice. I think some of them sort of taking their parents' prejudices, their family's prejudices, were hostile to me. There was a category of people who would be nice to me at school, but if I saw them in town, they would be, you know, cold. They wouldn't respond, because I think they knew that if they acted friendly towards me, their parents and family would be upset. So it made me think about race very early on.
Your book, it deals with history, but it also, you know, with the civil rights and with the, you know, U.S. Black history, but it also is your personal story. You think that was the big appeal of your book?
Uh-huh. The New York Times did make on Juneteenth the best book, named it one of the best books of the year, and it sold very, very well and got really, really great reviews. I do think it's the personal side of it, the personal touch in there, because people can relate. You know, you're thinking about what would it be like to be a six-year-old and that kind of circumstance and the intensity of it and other things that I talk about in the book. It's very accessible.
That's historian and Pulitzer Prize-winning author Annette Gordon-Reed. She was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Damme from New York.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments, or greetings. Dial the international code +1 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1 202-258-3076. 0208-258-3076.
And now in Nateland Africa Sports, let's go straight to Abuja and join Samson O'Malley. Hi, Samson.
Hi, Douglas, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. South Africa women's T20 cricket team triumphed over England in Cape Town in their semi-final to progress to the nation's first World Cup final during the ICC Women's T20 World Cup 2023. South Africa had been to five previous World Cup semi-finals across all formats without success, but now stand on the brink of a career-defining moment for what is largely a young group of players. Chasing 165 to win, England were cruising at 132-3 before Siva Brunt's dismissal for 40 sparked a collapse of 5 wickets for 26 runs in 22 balls. The Proteas will now face defending champions Australia in the final at Newlands on Sunday. In basketball news, Angola qualified for their 9th FIBA Basketball World Cup after outplaying Cape Verde on Saturday night at the Pavilhão Multiusos do Kalimba. Angola, who were cheered on by an enthusiastic home crowd, beat the Blue Sharks of Cape Verde 80-67 points. For Angola, the victory means there is a light at the end of the tunnel and they can start making plans for Japan, Indonesia and the Philippines in August. Earlier, South Sudan qualified for the FIBA 2023 Basketball World Cup. The side went into the final window in need of just one win to make the global competition on the first time of asking. And in their first game of the final window of the qualifiers, South Sudan beat Senegal 83-75 to seal qualification for the August 25th to September 10th event that will be hosted by the Philippines. In athletics, Africa 100 meters record holder Ferdinand Omanyala set two world leading times following his victory at the second leg of Athletics Kenya track and field weekend meet at the Nyayo National Stadium on Saturday evening. The reigning Commonwealth Games 100 meters champion set a new lead of 9.81 seconds to erase the 9.86 seconds time he set on Friday at the same venue. Omanyala beat Samuel Imeta to second place in 9.94 seconds and South Africa's Henrietjie Behintzes to third in 10.22 seconds.
We're on the right track just to maintain so that August and September gets us still in the same shape. I think going off for like 1.5 months, just training, and then the next race is on 12th in South Africa, and then the next will be on 26th in South Africa still, and then the Botswana Continental Tour, and then we come back for the Kipkeno Classic.
And finally, Italian Manuel Tarozzi of the Green Project Bardiani won the 7th stage of the Tour of Rwanda on Saturday. At the end of his solo ascent of Mount Kigali stage of Tour de Rwanda 2023 from Nyamata Bugesera district to Mount Kigali to set up a tight contest ahead of Sunday's 8th and final stage. Tarozzi was victorious after 115.8 kilometers in a stage that was characterized by huge crowds and a competitive edge as the riders will look to put in their final efforts. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Douglas.
Thanks, Samson. It's Sunday here on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect with music from the continent.
My nigga stay on guard cause the street is so cold. You know if you carry the weight I put on my shoulder. Girl, I said I'd be home by the weekend, I know. But I gotta stay on the grind and stack up my door. Many people wanna come try to waste time. They say the grass is greener on this side. My mama said the snakes are gonna still try. But that's okay, I got G's and they will ride. But yeah, you know, say over sapping on my sickness. But granny, I'm just minding my business. That's why the earth and the sea is my weakness. While the world gon' see my existence. They never thought a young nigga would get so far. Steps in, it's over. Show get it, yeah. Are we? Blue is cold, are we? No, no. Every day is a celebration. Smoke a J for the elevation. Forget the exaltation. I'ma get what check, I just wanna give you the issue in a decorum. You make a brother fall in love. My baby, you know that I got you, and I know say many people won't try they bet, they bet. Cause I know say now you be my weakness. My mama said the snakes are gon' still try, but that's okay, I got G's and they will ride. And yeah, you know say over sabi not my sickness. Oh baby, I'm just minding my business. I swear the earth and the sea is my witness. Now the world gon' feel my existence. They never thought a young nigga will get so far. By my papa, by my papa. So when the elephant steps in, it's over. Show get it,
I'm
corner, she want the corner, my location. She want to germinate on top of this, my plantation. And if I answer, she go carry me, go for vacation. She want to get down, but she know no sit me a big gladiator. Mama, the girl a down galanty, body down balance, ready to fire take off. Mama, I know they too shut down, but my grandma, me I fi carry your galley take off. Mama, mama, my day make I tell you, I know they want day to like say, me I supposed to go holiday, but I want to stay. She thought I was lazy.
I'm different thing fan ne boobers. Nya song song, marang nan gaba. I can put you on. Wana ka unyala, jengele ne moth. Come on, just my London. Sfige na peshe, sihi male malanda. Baby, wami. Baslela na mono, makelwa next week. Better tell him it's more than love, this land and sea. Lo lai, pele supe. Peggy, when I went, woman never look me. I shall it back, the tobe lum te. Cause you know I want you. Want you to be tight to me, baby. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, but if you got this time, do the quelling, tell you about pay. Yeah, easy telling. Oh, is it quelling of whom is it? I think it's said, I think it's said, I think it's said, it's a lot of games. I've been going it quelling. Sang a bang, fagumoy, and going I fell. I'm not getting up, my phone, I must say. When I know they knew I'm in bed, they said, Talan it fool, I can't. I just know what I'm busy for to belly. Tell them a boot, I'm a little stay. Tell them I'm in our wings, he's one belly. Did you turn up me? Fella go a shinty, young sang a knees. Fana now I'm a cabin, I'm a good ladies. Who could do please? I tell you, please. Who can't do this? Did you turn up me? Fella go a shinty, young sang a knees. Sing a nobody in peace, my sang a knees. Who could do please?
Man, get tonight till I fade out. Keep the vibe, no, you're on my way out. Pull a balu, anytime we step out. The men them outside, we know they us. No they look for us, we know they us. Though they see the mula, we don't spray us. Thank God, say the don't pay out. Okay, see, I'm ahead of them, I see what you. I'm a baller, you got on me. No man fit up to me, he know me, you go collect. See, I'm on a middle, I see what you. I'm a chase to my friends and click. When I call them, I all pulling up. We strap up with the hands and the swords and things. Bring hell to anybody who try to see. I'm your dad, I'm your uncle, I'm your popsy. I be old man, no go, they call me Gen Z. Red I see, steady giving them the multi love power. They can never near me. I smile about lover, just go. But oh, you don't show, I'm on my polo white, my face show. Sweet boy for life, you don't know.
And that was our Sunday Music Spot on Nightline Africa from the English service of the Voice of America. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Join us again on Saturday. Have a great evening. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington.